G'day, it's Will.
And this is Charlie, and our AFL adjacent podcast, Two Guys, One Cup, is back.
Yep, check it out now on the Listener app. In the meantime, here's a promo.
When it comes to footy podcasts, you can listen to the experts.
I feel their power is being undermined by the AFL system itself.
The analysts.
Tackles 25 to 16, 26 to 16. So don't they win in the ball?
Then there's Two Guys, One Cup. An AFL podcast with Will Anderson and Charlie Clawson.
Oh, Dougie.
Max Gawn's nickname is Dougie.
He's Dougie.
Do you reckon you could extrapolate from Gawn to Dougie? Max Dougie. Gawn, gone, leave, leaves, trees in the ground, dig, dug, Dougie.
Will and Charlie may not always get it right.
I feel there's a lot of pessimism from Melbourne fans at the moment.
Yeah, I don't think they're a top eight side.
Melbourne are the premiers for 2021!
But they're never short of big ideas.
I believe the Candyman has retired the title of the Candyman, which means there is a big Candyman-shaped hole on the Gold Coast that could be filled by Ben King.
Two Guys, One Cup, a weekly AFL podcast with Will Anderson and Charlie Clawson. Released every Wednesday exclusively on the Listener app. Download the Listener app for free and search Two Guys, One Cup.
We are Two Guys, One Cup.
Two Guys, One Cup, an AFL adjacent podcast.
Hear new episodes now on the Listener app.
A Listener production.
The following episode of FOFOP is rated MA. It contains alternating hosts, a rotating roster of guests, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that it is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15 or anyone who came here looking for one of those highbrow NPR-type podcasts. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. I'm Charlie Clawson, and my guest this week was just telling me off air that he is the most talented member of the comedy troupe Auntie Donna. It is Broden Kelly. Welcome back to FOFOP.
And I'll say it on air. I don't care. I'll say it anywhere.
Oh, shit.
Except in like hair growth. So I like we're three men from Melbourne, right? And I think because I hang around them, I've grown a beard, and only because of that. Like, I'm in a group with a guy with currently bleached blonde hair and a big Rasputin beard, and then a guy who looks like a Russell Brand, Dave Grohl kind of situation. Like, they're bold statements of hair.
Yeah. And so you felt like compelled to.
Yeah, I felt the need to.
You needed you needed a thing.
Yeah.
An affectation.
So I decided to make my hair start receding and to, you know, look like the everyman, and here we are.
Did you ever contemplate, like, I don't know, becoming the guy with the pipe, or, like, you know, the guy who never takes off his sunglasses,
like the pipe guy,
or something? You could have been the guy who never takes off his sunglasses.
I do like sunnies, to be honest, and I have prescription sunnies, so I will have them on for a very long time. Do you know what, right? Last year, Mosh contacted me and were like, hey, man, you got no hair. Do you want us to give you hair? And I was like, no, I don't want hair, because I've lost my hair in the public eye because we started doing Donna in 2013-ish, and I was, you know, I was losing my hair then, but I still had it to the point now where it's gone. And there's so many like mid-20s boys who are going through this crisis of losing their hair, and they go like, oh, you're my reference point. It's fine to shave my head. And I'm like, holy shit, I'm an icon for poor dudes losing their hair too early in their 20s.
So hang on. How does this come up in conversation? Like, do they open with that, or is there?
No, this is just like boys in Australia who, you know, with ginger hair or with pale skin, you're like, how am I going to look bald? And they go, well, Broden did it and he looks okay. And, you know, you get DMs here or there and stuff, and I'm an, you know.
So it's happened more than once that a bald dude in his 20s has said, hey, man, thank you. You gave me the courage to finally step into, own who I am.
I reckon over 100 times.
Really?
I reckon.
That does qualify you as an icon of sorts, because I can't think of, like, I don't think I've influenced over 100 people in any look or style. It's not like I've started. I do remember there was a kid on Home and Away who he was so, I, you know, because you have like after work functions or, you know, birthday parties, whatever. And so he would see me away from set. And, you know, if it was a semi-formal thing, I might wear like a t-shirt with like a suit jacket over the top, maybe even sure. like a rock and roll t-shirt with a suit jacket over the top.
Yeah.
And that just blew his mind. He was like 22. And he was like, oh, I remember this is like the third time I'd done it. He's like, man, he's gone, that look is just so cool. I'm going to start doing it. And I didn't sort of have the heart to tell him, this is quite common for people of my generation to put a dress jacket over an anachronistic type t-shirt.
I'd be afraid to do it still, to be honest.
Oh, you would never do that?
I struggle with the step up from informal to formal. I struggle with that.
Yeah, I would put that more in informal though, right? I think it's like rock and roll. It's like record executive. It's like director. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
You need to show some kind of status, but also I'm an everyman. So put a suit jacket over. Like even if it's a vintage suit jacket, even better. Like you're one of the Beastie Boys then. Wear it with Converse and then you got going on.
You need a good t-shirt though. Like your t-shirt needs a strong sort of elastic collar if it's a t-shirt. It can't be you got to find the right t-shirt. It's less about the blazer, it's more about the t-shirt.
That is true.
Do you remember finding your style for the first time?
Yeah, look, it's actually been an ongoing process, and I would say, well, my wife would definitely argue I had no style when she met me. That's not true. It's just that the style I had, she did not approve of. And I think I sort of like, I can take you through the eras of Charlie. You know how they do those infographics where it's like, you know, this is the DeLorean over the trilogy and they show you all the different like design edits.
Yeah, I want the Charlie.
The Charlie
eras.
Design edit. Okay. So 90s, high school years, was very much about shifting out of kind of heavy metal into grunge. So it was a lot of Blundstones, jeans, flannel shirts, black t-shirts, you know, and the flannel shirt would be knotted around your waist. I did step up and buy a leather jacket off my sister's friend, but I wore it to a year 9 party and a dude called me Fonzie all night and I lost all courage and never put
it on
again.
That's all it takes, isn't it? Yeah. That's all it takes. So you were saying you were quite culturally influenced. Like Kurt Cobain famously talks about when I dressed the way I dressed because that's all I had. That's the clothes I could find. And the bullies used to beat me up for dressing that way. And then one day I looked out and I was performing and I saw the bullies dressed like I was dressed. And that's like,
I'm 100% one of those bullies. Like, not that I was a bully, but I was a private school kid who could, who could definitely afford better clothes, but I would wear old op shop cardigans over t-shirts and shit like that. Then when I got to uni, and it was kind of like an arts-based campus, and I was like confronted with some real out there kind of style type people. And everyone was wearing, and this is going to sound so fucking dumb, but like in the 90s, cons weren't cool. Like they had gone through a phase and they'd gone out of fashion in the late 80s, and then they sort of came in again with grunge. I couldn't afford cons. So I bought a pair of Dunlop Volleys and I taped up the white rubber around the bottom and I spray painted them black so I could get the.
You made your own chucks.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But then they started leaking one day at uni. Michael Chamberlain, I think it had been raining. That's right. Michael Chamberlain was looking at my shoes and he was like, why are your Converse like running? Because I was getting like splotches all over them.
That's embarrassing. Yeah. That's hard. I used to, you know, because I was a boy in the 2000s. And ankle socks were the biz. You couldn't wear socks that were long.
Yeah.
That was just.
Yeah, yeah. You can't have any hint of sock. Like it's got to be sneaker and then sexy ankle.
So I used to take my long socks up to where my ankle was and then
cut them.
The front of socks, fold them over the top of my foot.
Oh.
I would just like over the top of
the
my
ankle
sock.
Tube, you would fold back over your. That's genius. Yeah.
And then I was the coolest lad in school.
That's judged.
Unless I needed to take my shoes off, in which case I was in big trouble.
Humiliated.
Yeah. So you moved to, what would you call that second movement?
The second phase is more like indie kid, you know, like I thought I was Jeff Buckley. I grew my hair long and, you know, was dressing a lot from op shops.
So far you're dressing as a lot of people who died.
Yeah. They're my icons, man. And then, you know, coming out of uni early 20s, there was sort of like, wasn't like a club scene. That's when I started going to nightclubs and probably started like, discovered like ecstasy and things like that. So
what year is this?
Like early 2000s. So it would have been like, I'm trying to think of it would have been like Chemical Brothers, kind of like
basement jacks,
a lot of like tracksuit tops and skinny jeans. People used to wear white thongs back then in summer. You'd wear your pale jeans with your white thongs.
I mean, this podcast is made with one of the most iconic early 2000s thong wearers.
Oh, really?
In Will Anderson. Yeah, oh, surely.
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't remember him ever in the white thongs, but he definitely.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Yeah.
No, he's the thong man.
Yeah, he definitely. But he was different. His was like a more of an indie thong, whereas I'm talking more. I was more mainstream with my thongs. I had a faux hawk at one point. Do you remember when Williams had a faux hawk? I had one of those.
Were you in the Potbellies?
Then I meet my wife, and she's not into that look at all. She's much more a rock and roll kind of chick. So she started molding me in, you know, into the person she wanted. So then it was a lot of kind of more like not suits, but like suit jackets, good pants, you know, but just a bit more style, a bit of a rock and roll kind of.
This is like late 2000s, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
So are you talking like, I remember this year, are you talking like flared jeans?
Yep, there's some flared jeans. Jeans rough. With patches and rips and shit like that.
And then maybe like a pink collared shirt under the blazer.
Never went pink collared, never popped a collar, never went like Fred Perry or anything like that.
A lot of mousse in your hair?
Yeah, I'd say there's a bit of mousse. Like I said, faux hawk for a while. And then I hung on to the Brad Pitt in 7 pineapple spike for a bit. I even had a ball bearing necklace at one point. I think in the last, the changes slowed down and it got a lot more normal. And then I discovered what I think is what my look is now and what I feel most comfortable in is white trash. Like if you want to know my fashion icon, it's Brad Pitt in California. I look good in fucking like trucker caps, dirty boots, jeans, t-shirts, cut off t-shirts like this one. That's my look. Like the more white trash, the better.
I think that suits your generation the best.
What?
And I say like your generation, like I'm 40 years younger than you. But like, yeah, your era, not to say you're not in your era, but like, you know, your era of music is the 2000s, yeah? Yeah.
Well, your 90s to 2000s, early
2000s. 90s to 2000s, yeah. There are some people of your generation who haven't aged well and some people who've picked it and locked in. Yeah. I'm watching from afar, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't imagine you looking at you're in yourself, I think. You're dressed appropriately. As I sit here now looking at you with your Saints scarf behind you,
yeah.
You're killing it.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate that. Like I do feel like you get to a point in your 40s. Well, 30s is really where it starts. That's where you are now. You're getting to that point of you kind of don't have that kind of drive or urge to sort of define who you are that you have in your 20s. Things start to ease off a bit and you get a lot more comfortable with the things you like. Like the less complicated your friends are, they're the ones you hang out with. The less complicated, you know, your fashion choices are or your fashion options are, that's what you sort of sit with. That's what I think life is about. It's about undoing the complications of your early 20s.
Yeah, if you know, in your 20s, you're looking for interesting art, you know, you're going and challenging yourself and finding all these things. And then I guess in your 30s, you're coming back to simple art.
Well, I think that's right. You know, it's kind of an expansion and contraction, right? Like you kind of, that's when you do your travel. That's when you sort of a bit more, take more risks with career or whatever it is. And then I think there is a contraction of that where you
– yeah.
Not a contraction in the negative sense, but it's more just a focus. You become more focused on the things that you've done your exploring, and now you're focusing on the things you like.
What's it called when soup reduces?
Soup reduces?
It's called reduction.
Yeah.
It's a reduction of yourself, but in a positive way. Have you ever met a 20-year-old boy? They're the worst, Charlie. You know what I mean?
20-year-old boy, yeah. Not that it hasn't been related to someone. Like I'm not – oh, that's not true, actually. I was harassed by a group of like late 20s, late teens, early 20s in Edinburgh last year. I dropped my wife and a child. I'd driven them to Glasgow and then had to drive the car back to Edinburgh and catch a train back to meet them. And so
that's a 30-minute round trip in Scotland.
It was really not that big a deal at all when you come from Australia.
Yeah.
But I was walking to the train station. And I was looking at my phone and this group of kind of like youngins said to me, oh, nice phone. And I was so
showed you
bewildered by Was it an insult? I mean, I think the idea was, like, stop being, like, staring at your phone, you dork. But, like, I think it's kind of sarcastic. But I was just like, what prompted that? Like, I'm just a guy.
Yeah, they wanted you to live in the moment. That's nice. It's nice.
Do you
Scottish
think that's
kids.
What it was? No, it was more of a condescending, like, if I had been, like, riding a bike, oh, look, bike guy. Or it was more.
Yeah, it was a flag. It was whatever you said. Whatever, it was just a hate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But with no follow-up. Like, it was just a comment. It wasn't a provocation to a fight. It was just a pithy observation designed to make me feel terrible about myself, which it kind of
yeah,
did.
Yeah, great. Well, hopefully it didn't work. I mean more like when you're in your early 20s, all you're trying to do is figure out who you are and you're trying to figure out what you have to say. And that takes some time to figure out. And all you want to do is have people listen to you, but no one. What you don't realize when you're that age is you have nothing interesting to say. And if you do have things to say, you haven't figured out how to eloquently express them yet, whether that's performing comedy or music or whatever you want to do. You haven't figured out the way to express that. You probably, and the truth is you need like a fair few amount of years where you're just eating shit and being told you're worthless to get to a place where what you're saying has a bit of nuance and depth. But if you meet a 20-year-old, they weigh like 10 kilos. They and they're the worst because they haven't figured out what they have to say yet. And when you're 20 and or 21 and you're just out starting your adventure, you don't realize how off-putting you are to be around.
No, I maybe not at the time. Like I think that, but that's because I find it interesting that like this whole baby boom or even Gen X looking back at millennials or Zoomers now and everyone's like, oh, kids these days are so soft and they need safe spaces and blah, blah, blah. But they're having this conversation as if it's not cyclical and happens with every generation. Like it's totally. Not a new invention that teenagers seem uninterested in our values or whatever, blah, blah, blah.
No.
But also I don't understand their world at all. Like I don't understand the things they're dealing with, the challenges they're facing. So if they're very sensitive or, you know, maybe there's something going on that I don't understand, like social media, they've grown up with social media. I can't imagine what that would do to your mindset.
That Woodstock 99 documentary was embarrassing. I loved nu metal so much.
Oh, did you? Oh my man. God.
I was eight. And I got the Hot Dog Limp Bizkit album and just thought Hot Dog where he's
yeah, says, chocolate starfish and the hot dog flavored water.
Yeah. Oh, great album.
look, here's the thing. I don't know if you know this, Broden, but I went through a bit of a Limp Bizkit kind of deep dive last year. I talked about it on TOEFOP quite a bit where I just got very hooked on Limp Bizkit because I'd never – new metal I sort of dismissed in the moment. But then I went back and listened to it and I said, look, yeah, it's awful, but at the same time, it's very enjoyable and it's a very distinct sound. Like it had its moment, like its four-year period where it was fucking everywhere. And I've got to admit, like Limp Bizkit, the popular tracks are great pump-up tracks. Like they're good. I think Will said they're good WWE promo tracks. And that's exactly what they're made for.
It's exactly right. And I stand by the guitarist, Wes Borland, yeah. Who's being a proper good songwriter.
And weirdo.
Fred Durst just... Yeah, and for proper weirdo. But yeah, no, like that's my childhood is wrestling and Limp Bizkit and Korn and Linkin Park. And to be honest, it's most of my 34-year-old life as well. It's just looking back at that.
Well, that gets worse too because the older you get, the more you just sort of cling to that period in your life. And I think it's I sort of never really understood it with like my older brothers and sisters and, you know, family members and stuff who, you know, like they only listen to the same songs. But now I'm here. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's too hard to get into new music, you know. And I hear a lot of stuff like you listen to Triple J and this is not a knock on Triple J. This is a knock on me. But I don't get any of it. Like I don't like yeah, any sure. of it. It all sounds the same.
Sure. No, totally. And I find the hardest bit is like, because if you listen to a song, that's kind of easy. You go, I like that song or I don't like that song. I'm fatigued by the narratives you've got to follow around them.
Okay.
It's not enough to just go like, oh, I like that song, I like that, or I don't like that song. You've got to like, Miley Cyrus has released this song and it's about her ex-boyfriend and it's a reference to the flowers from another song by Bruno Mars and that's part of the enjoyment of music and taking in music is the narrative around it.
Yeah.
And that's too hard.
Yeah.
And so, like, you just hear a song and it's something you go, well, that's not that interesting or
fun. Yeah, it's like the Rolling Stone review of an album. When you read a Rolling Stone review, the links they make to the person's actual life, you know, this song was inspired to, this is a clear reference to ex-partner, blah, blah, blah. And then I fucking hear it. Like, I'm the kind of guy who can listen to an album and I don't know the names of any of the songs. Like I always bring up this example, but Nevermind. I know every song on Nevermind. I know the words of every song, but I could probably name half of the songs. I don't know what they're called. I just know it's the song with the guitars or it's the song with the drum start or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. That brings up for me something, an epiphany I've had about being a fan of something recently. And by epiphany, James from Mr. Sunday Movies.
Yeah, James Mason. James Clement.
James Clement with Nick Mason.
That's what I meant to say.
Who said, nothing makes you a bigger fan than another fan. Like, if you camp out to see Star Wars, that doesn't mean you're a bigger fan than Charlie who watches it when it, you know, and enjoys it. It just means that you express your fandom in a different way. If you know every song on an album, the name of it and when it was who produced it and how long exactly it is and who played the drum, doesn't mean you're a bigger fan. It just means that you like the statistics around it. And you don't need to show, you like, purely taking something in and enjoying it and maybe listen to it a lot of it, that's enough of a fan. With Arnie Donner's fans as well, I think, like, we have fans who moderate our Reddits or, you know, or join our Patreon or, you know, come to every show on a tour, and they are diehard fans, but then they're as equal a fan as the ones who just watch our videos when they come out. And one is not greater than the other. It's just an expression. Or do you disagree?
I mean, I've heard James say that, and I thought I agree with it, but hearing you explain it, I think I disagree with it because...
Please, tell me.
I know it's a really interesting idea, but I'm thinking, like, I think... Well, all right, put it into, and this is a good tie-in with your brand new podcast, The Footy with Broden Kelly. Think about, like, footy fandom, right? I would argue that someone who watches games at home all year round versus someone who actually goes and, you know, is in the cheer squad, maybe they've gone out with a banner or something like that, you know, who waits around for autographs, is a bigger fan than the person who's like, no, I love my team, but I just love it in the comfort of my home. I think that whatever metrics are measuring it on.
Or are they a bigger fan of community and being part of a team and, like, that's what they need in their life and it's expressed through a football club?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I guess the question is, what is fandom? Because, you know, you could argue that the person who goes to the games and gets the autographs in the cheer squad and the person at home have the same, they're as knowledgeable about the clubs, you know, the same club, they know all the statistics, all that kind of stuff. But you're right, it is how they express it. Maybe one of them, I mean, these people that we're creating in this narrative, I'm just thinking maybe one of them is neurodiverse and he doesn't feel comfortable in crowds or
exactly,
whatever.
Yeah. So, that's it.
I mean, this is actually a beautiful, Darren Aronofsky should direct this story. We could call it two fans.
Yeah, the two, who's a bigger fan, by Darren Aronofsky. On Fox Footy on Thursday nights, it's a Darren Aronofsky direct after AFL 360.
So you are doing this new podcast, and I just listened to the first episode. It's pretty bloody great. I mean, I'm a little annoyed that you have moved into the genre of.
I rang you, Charlie. You know this.
I know. You asked for my permission.
It would be something because Donna's taking 4 months off this year after our show comes out, and I was like, what the fuck am I going to do with myself? It's the first time I'm going to have time off since ever. And I was like, what am I genuinely going to do? And we got a dog and I'm going to do an extra podcast. The other thing is Tom, who I make the podcast with, I've known since I was 12. We're in the first day of year seven. We were in a class together. And he's now the composer for Arnie Donner. He's an actor nominated composer. And he went to acting school with me and never handed in an essay and never did any work. And they just never asked him to leave. They're like, yeah, we'll just charge you a hex debt. Just hang out. And he's just had a baby. And so he's becoming more busy. And we're like, well, this will be a good excuse to hang out and do a podcast about it. So that was the thinking behind it. And I've already discovered, Charlie, that it's hard to talk about footy if you're not an expert.
Here's the thing. I heard you say that a few times in the first episode because you kept getting, like, you know, the names of people wrong and whether or not they were still active in the AFL system and all that kind of stuff. But I loved it because it's exactly what you were just talking about. It's fandom. Like, I think that is what comes through as you and Tom are fans. Like, my mind was blown, and I don't know if you'd give spoilers for, like, non-narrative driven podcasts, but Tom's yeah. background is he was a Hawthorn supporter who got bored of winning and so has signed up to be a Gold Coast Sun supporter, which blew my mind. Like, only because I barrack for a club that I've never seen a flag in my lifetime. But the idea that someone could get bored of winning, I just, like, I can only imagine what that must feel like.
We talked about it on Two Guys, One Cup the other week, but the idea of this time of the year being the most optimistic and fun time to be a football fan is true, is that, you know, the time when you're optimistic about something is almost better than it happening. And having been through a Melbourne flag, I can tell you that's actually not true. It's the best part is when they win the premiership.
I mean, I haven't even been able to enjoy this year because, like, the Saints have had such horrific injuries. Like, I had a lot of enthusiasm, and now it's extremely tempered. And so now you start looking to other things that you can be like, all right, well, I just want to see effort. I just want to see some new faces, all that kind of stuff. But what I loved about your show is the passion that you have. And you said something in it that actually I wanted to ask you about, that because you are so silly in your professional life, and, you know, that's what you do for a living, being an Auntie Donna, that football kind of gives you this escape, like it sort of grounds you, you know, and you don't just watch your team, you watch all the teams, you watch all the footy shows and stuff. I think that's something a lot of people can identify with. And I'm not even like a big sports guy. AFL is really the only thing that I follow. But it is just something about that kind of escape that I've noticed, especially this year more than ever. Like, all my friends that I'm in the chat with, you know, all the AFL fans, just have needed it to come back so badly. I feel like there is more anticipation for it this year.
I feel that too.
Do you feel it as well?
There's like fandom talk, coming back to fandom or being obsessed with something. How you obsess about something in your teenage years, I think, is very different about how you obsess about something in your 20 years, once you've almost picked your career. So when you're in your teenage years, the things you obsess about are things maybe you're trying to build your identity, and you're looking at things going, I'm that, or I fit into that, or I want to become that. And then once you've decided what that is, then the things that you like to do in your pastime are pure, while you're attempting that goal, this is the thing, this is the place that has nothing to do with what you're doing. So whatever your career is, something that has nothing to do with it, usually that's footy because few people are footballers. It's a place that I can go, this is something I can invest in. It's going to happen whether I do anything or not. I can get upset, I can get mad, I can release it, I can talk to friends about it, and it's not going to be a personal thing. Because that's what, for me, at drama school, when I started to take acting very, very seriously, and by seriously I mean doing tongue twisters in the morning every day, was
Irish
when I got-
Irish wristwatch.
Did you ever do Alexander technique when you were-
I mean, I know what it is, but I wouldn't say I know I've ever done it.
It's about the way you- posture, you know, how you walk and keeping your body in line. And our acting teacher at school, and you just corrected there, Charlie, very well. Where I used to get up at 6 a.m. and, like, lay on the ground in my Ballarat lounge room, hands on my chest, and lay with a book under my thing and go, for like 15 minutes every morning. And then walk around doing tongue twisters and, like, exploring my body.
I used to do the same thing. I used to explore my body. A bit different to drama school, though.
Yeah. And one of our roommates had got his first girlfriend and was exploring someone else's body quite regularly.
Yeah, right.
And then at 6 every morning, they'd be in bed and then you just hear, from our Ballarat lounge room. I have to do this if I'm to become a great actor.
Yes, of course.
I must get up. And when I started to do this is when I became more obsessed with footy because it was so separate. And I think that's quite common.
Well, I think, like, I went to, you know, all boys high school and sport was everything. And, you know, like, you know, if you were good at sport, then you had no problems like socializing or anything like that. You were, like, I remember we had this kid come over from New Zealand, and ordinarily being the new kid at school, you know, it's intimidating, but he was really good at cricket. And he switched from union to Aussie rules. And in our first practice match, he just like annihilated five guys. He was a tank. And he just picked up the ball in the middle of the ground and just charged towards a goal and just broke jaws and collarbones on his way through without taking a bounce. But because he was good at sport, he was immediately accepted. And so consequently, I kind of retreated a bit from that because I'm like, ah, oh, it's all a bit too fucking like macho and footy show. And the Saints were shit at the time as well. So I kind of felt okay about falling off football. But then as I moved into the arts, darling, when I was meeting other young Broden Kelly types who were doing vocal warm-ups and discovering that they were into the footy as well. Like as soon as I met my first actor, because at the first I kind of hated actors when I started acting and, you know, when I was doing acting at uni, drama at uni, just fucking hated them all because they just seemed like such ponces, like so pretentious. And then I remember I met the first actor who was just like a normal bloke who grew up in the country and he loved Carlton and, you know, and I was like, oh, fuck. Oh, so you can do both. Like, and I agree. It was that separation, like, because it can feel so whatever, heady or whatever. And then just to have this thing where it doesn't matter, you know, you're called cut or in your lunch and you just sit down, and you start talking and it's like no small talk. You can just get straight into it.
As a side note, that's the actors, some are punces and some of my best friends are actors. There's like the best actors friends, they're my best friends, which is worth knowing. But that what you're talking about is exactly right. So why I wanted to start the podcast, because outside of Two Guys, One Cup and maybe a few others, I thought like when I listen to all the media and I said to a few friends, like I listen to two podcasts, which is friend stuff, but everything else is the lads or it's experts. And like, if you're not one of the lads or you're not an expert, you know, that's the most enjoyable bit about footy is the friendships and stuff. So like, I thought if I was going to do anything, it would be that is, you know, because yeah, exactly what you're saying. I hated footy at high school because I played it and I wasn't as good as the best footy players. And so you feel so fucking separated and it becomes a place of misery for you. But as soon as it becomes a fun thing to play tipping or super coach or just talk about, that's the, yeah.
Well, we always took great inspiration from before the game. Like I actually thought before the game was a really great format. I mean, I actually saw coincidentally on social media, I think it was one of the producers of the show. It was a 20 year anniversary of Before the Game, which I was amazed by. I didn't think it was that old, but I thought they nailed the formula. And when Will and I talked about doing Two Guys, One Cup, because we'd talk about footy on TOEFOP and it would annoy the TOEFOP listeners who weren't interested in football. And so we basically were forced to create a new podcast just so we could have all our footy chat. And I remember sort of saying like, we want it to feel like people who just are fans about the game. Like, let's not try and talk about like the games of the round and blah, 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 and the big issues in football. Let's just talk like guys who, you know, who are friends talk. And before the game, I thought that's what they did really well. Even though they had like an Andy Ma or Sam Lane on the desk or whatever, it was generally four mates talking, and then they would have like a proper sports journo steer the ship. We thought, let's do that, but without the proper sports journo to steer the ship. And consequently, here we are.
That's it. It's just it's a thing to talk about with your friend.
Yeah,
it's as simple as that, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's talking to your friend and having a thing to talk about.
I am slightly concerned that both you and Josh Garlop have entered the fray of a sports comedy podcast because you're both so funny in your own right. And having spoken to both of you, like, oh, man, have I gained the green light to the two pods that will replace us?
No. Yes. The answer is yes, Charlie. We're coming.
We're coming to get you.
Yeah. Josh Garlop is the best thing to happen to football in a decade. I know, like, excluding footballers and coaches and concussion protocols and the AFLW as an entire league, Josh Garlop is the first breath of genuine comedic fresh air.
Amazing.
To football.
He's so good. Like, it's just like, I don't know when I discovered his stuff, but, you know, we had him on my club. And he was sort of saying like the whole genesis of that stuff was, you know, he was working for Fox Footy and he was in charge of their digital content department, but didn't know what he was doing and just had a year of trying to make stuff. And that's why his video content is so good. But I mean, that explains the technical prowess, but it's the actual point of view and perspective, and the jokes are so good.
I don't want to get too niche and talk about a guy from Perth too much because, you know, no one cares about
Perth.
No,
we need to boost the WA numbers. They feel like they're neglected all
Perth's
the time.
Perth's great.
It's awesome.
He's an incredible basketballer, man. I went and watched him play in a tournament, a Red Bull tournament. And there was I was like, I'm going to go down and watch because we chatted a little bit. And I went down and there was like very good basketballers, tall,
ex-pro
big,
types,
ex-pro basketballers. And he won like all the games. And he's this spindly comedian from Perth with his spindly comedian friends from Perth. And he kicked all their ass and they lost the final round to another spindly Perth team. Like just these athletes from Perth. Wow. They're the Eskimo Joe of basketball, and they came over and impressed the East Coast.
Yeah, but you're right, though. It is a breath of fresh air. But I think that, but that's what I also think with your pod as well. Like, I mean, I had a good laugh too when you and Tom were trying out opening themes for this show. Because you're so right. It actually, I got a bit nervous that maybe like, you know, our theme was going to come under fire, but like you're quite right in terms of that generic, like it's almost that Triple M Rock like intro. There's always that why, like why is it so cliched?
Creativity is not huge in the AFL world. Like I think regularly about the same three songs play before every AFL game. One is Hell's Bells, one is Joker and the Thief by Wolfmother, yeah. And then I think another Wolfmother song is the other one.
Well, yeah, like, I felt like Wolfmother was bigger, you know, 10 years ago, and then shipping up to Boston sort of took center stage, and now it's Lose Yourself. Well, actually,
Lose Yourself.
Yeah, it's that kind of opening riff of dun 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 dun.
Like surely there's a bit more we can do there. Sure.
Yeah. Well, I didn't get to many games last year and definitely not many games in Melbourne. But a lot of the complaints I heard from people going to Marvel was there was too much razzle dazzle, like too much like turning the lights off and flashing, you know, playing music, and everyone was getting a bit shitty. Was that your experience?
Yeah. My experience, I'm a futurist. I'm up for anything. I'm up for change. And like,
That's not what a futurist is, by the way.
I want to destroy all old art. And that's what is future.
Well, futurists are people whose job it is to speculate within a certain degree of accuracy what the future
may
look like on the lines of socio-political architecture, you know, across like.
I was
society.
Going back to my. Like my year 12 study of Russian Revolution, where the futurists wanted to destroy all art.
Oh, okay. That could be another definition of it. I was thinking more the Jacques Fresco, the, you know, the people who, you know, design like cities connected
footy
by
chat
monorail.
With Charlie and Broden. Bit of footy yarn. Bit of.
I think there is room, though. Like the thing that I will say to you, and I hope you know you'll discover with your listeners of the show, is that there is a bigger appetite for this kind of sports-related content. Like even where I live, it's like a small town, but it's a very kind of alternative small town, and there are a lot of footy fans here. But they're not kind of your typical kind of like you know I was going to say meat and two veg. I don't know what you describe them. You're Johnny Lunch Pails, let's call them.
Give me a third one. Can you give me a third one?
A Joe Punch Clock.
Yeah, that's it. Good old French Joey Punch Clock.
They're all kind of like, you know, they're just all a bit sort of, you know, alternative and creatives, but they're all into footy, but they don't want to listen to like, you know, The Rub or Rush Hour or whatever. They want to hear. In fact, I don't know if I told you this story, but my niece came to visit from WA because we love WA. Great place. Perth.
Oh,
beautiful.
Awesome. Beautiful.
Northbridge, is it? Is that the Northbridge? Northbridge is a great
place.
Oh,
beautiful. That little strip there, yeah, go beautiful. Down, so you have a dinner.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Scarborough,
Beautiful. Oh, Scarborough. Yeah. Oh, Basil Zemplis.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, beautiful. Amazing.
Every time we do promo in Adelaide, we just went in the new Dungeons & Dragons movie for Australia only has three voices.
Oh, that's right. I saw something online.
And everyone who's gone to see it's like, are you in it or not? And I'm like, yeah, you don't know it's us. But we had to do a lot of promo for it. And anytime we do a Perth one, we just mention this one diner that closed like 5 years ago. That's our only shtick. It's like, can't wait to go back to Fast Eddie's. And then they go, oh, man, it's actually shut. And we go, what? We've done on like 9 radio shows in Perth in the last like 6 months.
So my niece was visiting from Perth, and we were going out for dinner at this sort of RSL, just a cheap Palmer cut dinner. And she's saying, oh, do people recognize you? And I'm like, no, like, you know, it's a pretty small town, pretty low key. And then as we're having dinner, this dude goes, Charlie, and he walks up and he drops his pants and he's wearing like red, white, and black striped Speedos.
Beautiful.
And he's like, yeah, and then like shuffles off without a word. And I was like, what the fuck was that all about? And then I talked about it on the podcast, and he reached out to me and said, oh, man, I'm really sorry. I'm the guy who flashed you. I listened to Two Guys, One Cup. I was just so excited. Just so excited to see you. But it's that kind of energy. You know what I mean?
Shout out that guy.
Yeah.
So, and your niece or your cousin will never forget it.
No. She was horrified. The dark side of fame, Broden.
Yes, exactly. I think that's a expansion of what a podcast is, isn't it? It's the personalization, the growth of personalization, and the growth of like unique experiences. Like with our Donna podcast, we have a good listenership, and they're all around the world, and like they connect so deeply with it, and famously with our stuff, people, there's a whole almost meme with our fan base that you never show Donna to your friends because it always goes badly.
Yeah, right.
Never show it to your friends. You enjoy it. There's no need to show it to your friends.
I do. I do love that about podcasts. I think you're 100% correct. You know, I was just sort of thinking about another like footy podcast I listen to, which is more, well, there's a couple I listen to that are Saints focused. They're, you know, just guys talking about the Saints. And I have such affection for both shows and the guys on the show. One of them I've sort of met and, you know, we've become kind of mates, but the others I don't know at all. But I do sort of like, you know, one of them's a musician and he was talking about how he's been booking gigs. And I was so happy for him, like as if, you know, we had this genuine friendship. I'm like, oh, that's good to hear that, because I knew he's working in a cafe in like, you know, 2 seasons ago, but now like he's gigging a lot more and things are really taking off for him. I'm like, oh, that's good stuff.
I've never met a Melbourne fan. I think you've heard me say as a community, I'm not huge on Melbourne fans, but I've never met a Melbourne fan that I didn't like. And that can't be possible, right? Like it has to be just when you connect, when you care about something a lot and another person cares about something a lot and you talk about it, that's very special.
I mean, I think in some instances, like you would have more in common with that Melbourne fan you've just met than some like married couples would have in common, like, and a stronger bond and more optimism, especially now. But I was thinking about that the other day because, you know, over the past kind of couple of years, and especially from doing the footy pod, I've made some friends like the dude who does this other podcast, you know, a couple of guys I met in Melbourne who are all Saints fans that I've met through them knowing that I'm a Saints fan. So we've kept in touch. And I was genuinely like, is it weird if I start a WhatsApp group now just for these dudes who a lot of them don't know each other? The only thing we have in common is St Kilda, but I like all of them. They don't all know each other, but like, is it presumptuous of me to be like, hey, this is like, you know, Saint, you know, the Saint chat or whatever you call it. I don't know.
Did you start it?
No, because I felt like, is it weird that I'm going to be like, hey guys, this is Charlie. You don't all know each other, but you know, I thought let's get talking about the Saints.
Oh man, you got to try it and you got to add me to it. I'll just sit there quietly.
Just sipping a beer in the corner.
And go, Melbourne won again, everyone.
Well, I already have like a WhatsApp for footy, predominantly like dominated by Carlton supporters, which was amazing last year to be in that chat when they fucking lost that last game by a kick.
I think you need to start it, man. I really think you should.
But do you think like if some Melbourne dude, that like say one of these guys that you met and liked, added you to a chat with a bunch of people that you didn't know and was like, hey, Broden, you know, we're all D's guys, man. Is that what you call each other, D's guys? Yeah. Like, would you be into that, or would you be like,
absolutely. I'd start soft.
Right.
I'd be like a, I'd be timid to begin with, and then 2 weeks in, I'd be like, fucking got to get out.
You
got to
sack Goodwin.
Yeah, like I would full enough. Like, I think we need more of that. Did you? I watched the second series of the Australian cricket team series on Prime.
Yeah,
Scott Cummins, is he the captain at the moment?
Pat Cummins.
I say
how
Scott
fucking
because
good looking
he,
is that dude?
Oh, oh my looking man, God. Very successful. Doesn't Ridiculous. Need cricket, but you know,
yeah.
His girlfriend, his now wife. I think they just saw at a pub, and she was like, "He's just good looking, so I'm going to talk to him." And then he said, "I'm studying," which is kind of true. But then she looked him up, and he was the captain of the Australian cricket team, or was in the Australian cricket team. So he's going okay, but. The reason I bring it up is because he's in a WhatsApp. It kind of sickened me, but he's in a WhatsApp with him and like a few other cricketers. And at the time, Scott Morrison.
Oh my god! Oh no!
So like the like that the Prime Minister was in a like within a WhatsApp with the with I think with yeah the captain of the Australian cricket team, and I think legitimately it was called Legends or something.
Oh my god. What memes is Scott posting?
Oh, can you imagine? I wonder what he'd be like with his guard down, to be honest.
I don't know. He strikes me as such a weird, just a slimy, weird operator. Like when he was at Prime Minister, I just got the sense that he was like David Brent. Like he was just this, like just incredibly awkward dude, like this daggy dad persona that he'd cultivated. But he just was so – like his ego just did not allow him to take responsibility for anything. But I just – I also found all that kind of I'm a Sharkies guy and, you know, blah, 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 just so forced. Like I didn't buy
Scotty
any
from
of
marketing.
That shit.
The best sort of branding by Batuta ever. That he could not shake that.
Yeah.
But you say all this stuff, Charlie, but give me 400 things that he did wrong. I bet you couldn't get – could get pretty close, but yeah. But yes, no. That's what I'm having a crack at. A bit of footy stuff, but I want you to come on at some point. Obviously,
oh, I'd love to. I hope that I don't bring the tone of the show down.
We're still figuring out what we're going to do.
No offense, Broden, but I was actually quite excited to talk to Tom. I only know one other Sun supporter because I am contemplating because I live so close to Carrara, I'm contemplating getting a Suns membership.
Do it. Can I tell you, Charlie? I don't know if we've said this before on air. I say this a bit, but a Gold Coast Suns membership or a GWS membership are the two best memberships you can buy in the AFL. Because one, if whenever they come to Melbourne, you get whatever seat you want. They're like, yeah. But you go to president's luncheons in Melbourne, like you get like the full thing. And then also he's just like a normal $60 a year member. He's just a member, right?
Yeah.
And he's got like a brick with his name on it at Metricon Stadium.
That's $1,000 at Moorabbin if you want to get your name on it.
If you're a Collingwood fan and you pay like $900 a year, they just send you smeared in shit on paper. Fuck you. Like, you're like, can I go to a game? Like, go fuck yourself. Yeah.
Someone comes to your door, punches you in the gut and takes your wallet.
I'm pretty sure he could have gone to the grand final. Like,
fuck off.
Yeah.
Really?
Like they're the best memberships in the AFL, man. No joke.
Well, but I genuinely like the Suns, you know, like, you know, St Kilda is always going to be my number one, but I love Stewie Jew, love Tuke Miller, love Jared Witts. Got very excited to see, I did love Isaac Rankin last year, but you know, that's a sad tale. And Matt Rowell. Yeah. Matt Rowell. I think they're an exciting team and they're my team to rise, but I guess the question is, I just want to talk to Tom and get his take on, you know, like, well, obviously there's the Hawthorn of it all, but is it tough kind of barracking with this club that has such a tiny, like, what is their culture and tiny fan base? Like, what am I going to hook into? At the moment, I'm hooked into Tuke and Stewie Jew and Tony Cochran for a while, but he's gone now. But I did
You're
love.
You're famous. You think they're the right wing team, don't you? Or you want them to brand as the
right
wing team?
Oh, no. I was saying that's the way they stay relevant is they just go, they go full right wing. Yeah. But I don't believe they are that. I just think it's amazing that, like, I love the Gold. There's parts of the Gold Coast that I love. And I just, find it hard that there's player retention issues when it's like it's such a good spot to be when you're young and getting paid $100,000, a couple hundred thousand bucks a year.
It feels like they're turning a corner now, and you know, people like Tuk Miller, who is potentially, you know, a top five AFL player this season. There's a chance that, like, because if they turn a corner and it becomes the Geelong of north of Victoria, where every player just wants to go there, that's sick. That's great. And like, sorry to get into too much footy stuff. I'm sorry, faux foppers, but like,
no, this is the whole point of it, mate.
Oh, great. Is that like, if AFL at least gets on parity with NRL in Queensland, if they get to the place where like they just even compete a little bit. That's huge for the AFL. Like, you could have 10 Tasmanian teams and they wouldn't be worth one successful Gold Coast team.
And the NRL is ramping up.
The Dolphins or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, the AFL need to work hard. I'd be happy to come in and talk about that. But I also would need to take you to task about your prediction for the Saints. Second last. It did sting a little.
That's my article thing. That's like me trying to cut through and be a bit of Cane Corns. What
is that you're just fucking, you're a professional and you're not going to mince words. You're not going to take my feelings into account. You're just going to speak your mind.
I did think of you after I did it. I thought Charlie will be upset, but then Charlie also understands because you've got the coach now and you got the, you know, you got the Tsitsipas or, what's his name? Tsitsipas? No, that's the tennis player.
Philippou.
Yeah. Different Greek person. But you're on the right track. Do you feel like you're on the right track now, Charlie?
Yeah. Look, I think that coaching group is all pretty good. It's just hard, though. Like, everyone's like, oh, it's fine. It's a year to explore. But if we don't have our best team on the park, he's not going to get a good look at everyone to know what we're going to do next year. I think, look, there's a bunch of dudes on our list who Saints fans, we just can't tell if they're good or not. We think they should be good. But so far, they just haven't given us enough evidence. And I think what I'm hoping for is this will be a bit of a flashpoint year where Ross is like, no, he can play, he can't play. And we'll just have some clarity around that because for 10 years, we have had just a bunch of dudes on our list that you're like, they should be good, but, you know, but they're not. Why is that?
Did you hear that Ross Lyon, Jack Steele rumor?
What's that rumor? No.
Well, it was they were in a meeting and Ross Lyon said something like that, you know, about preparation, and he said, "Jack, you're an 8 out of 10 preparer, as far as like you know," and then said under his breath, "I prefer my captain's 10 out of 10," and was kind of like just very softly said it and walked off, and it was a big
where did
like.
Did you hear that?
Cane sounds, Corns.
Oh dear, fuck Cane Corns. No way that really happened. Like
something like that happened, I bet. And that, like, when you hear old Ross Lyon players, they're like, he does that shit.
Yeah, yeah.
He's been through it.
The audio that they recorded at the practice match. That was the interesting thing. I mean, I saw a press conference that he did today where he tried to sort of say, look, it was nothing. I wouldn't be embarrassed if the audio came out. There was a few things that were maybe a bit line ball. But when we told the players what it said, they just kind of laughed and walked out.
Today, that press conference was the first time I heard old Ross Lyon. He had that energy of, you know, media Ross Lyon still in there.
Deflect.
Just a bit of fun. I'm a fun guy. I'm really cool. And that was the first one where it felt a bit like, oh, he's back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like a bit pissed off.
I was saying to Will on Two Guys, One Cut, which is just started. We're back, baby. We are coming out every Tuesday on the listener app. But I feel maybe I didn't notice it the first time around, or maybe he's changed in the last 10 years. But if you closed your eyes, like I kind of just was like trying to disconnect myself from knowing who he was. And it's like, you might think this person was like losing their mind. Like the non sequiturs, the weird observations, the little chuckles that he has to himself. Like he does not come across competent at all. But like maybe it's a Columbo style situation where he disarms you by being a bit like crumpled and a bit like, oh, you know, because he has that kind of, you know, Ross drawl or whatever.
Who do you think the weirdest coach is? Is it Ross?
The weirdest.
Because I'll tell you who I think's the most like level-headed, normal coach now, and just like I is Michael Voss. If you listen to him in press, oh, yeah. he just seems like a nice, normal man
straight
doing his job.
Yeah. Weirdos would have to be Clarko, I think. Clarko is clearly the biggest weirdo. I think Chris Fagan is the most paternal. And I think that maybe Bevo or Chris Scott are the scariest.
Yeah, Bevo could be craziest as well, for sure.
Is that just because of all like he does, like, you know, philosophical quotes and shit, like Define Seasons based on like the Outer War?
It's just
shit,
a wild card, man. Like that Tom Morris thing last year, I feel like that could happen at any moment.
I was thinking about the Tom Morris thing the other day. So for people who don't know, Tom Morris was a sports journalist for Fox Footy who got into a heated confrontation after round one with Luke Beveridge. And then coincidentally, and I'm saying that with inverted commas, I don't know, some leaked audio came out of him talking in unacceptable terms about a female coworker. And then another video came out where he's being really racist and sexist as well.
And he's back.
But do you think those two events were unrelated?
I don't think they were unrelated. I don't think that Luke Beveridge
released the audio.
I think that like a bunch of old boys went, this is a great time to do this to Tom, probably. Like this is the perfect time to showcase this thing he said a few years ago. And then one thing happened and then another person went, well, this is a great time. There'd be so many saved WhatsApps out there, Charlie, that are just ready to go and ruin someone's career.
Well, I'm amazed that the Saints Box audio hasn't come out yet. Like it's been a week and a bit. Clearly there's nothing in it too fruity. Otherwise it would have come out by now. I was scouring Big Footy. I couldn't find it.
Yeah, the things that we don't know, Charlie, they're the scary things.
Well, the journalist who was questioning Ross today said something weird. He was like, you're talking about the leaked audio. He said, I believe there was a maths, like a Married at First Sight reference, Ross. And Ross was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I'm like, that's a very specific reference. You know what I mean? Too specific for this journalist just to have made it up.
So someone heard it.
But what's the fucking maths reference? it's like a theatre sports game. Like,
it's the highest rating show on TV.
Maths and
maybe it was a distraction. Like, you know, have you ever seen that movie Operation Mincemeat, where in World War II they took a dead body and the English sent it to shore in Greece, and they tried to make it look like an English soldier, and in his pockets was a letter saying that England's gonna land in Spain or something like that. And so the Nazis actually found it, and so they prepared for that, and then they landed elsewhere.
Right.
Maybe Ross Lyon is playing 4D chess now, and this is his dead English soldier.
You are not the first person to have suggested that, and I'm like, what? Like, what
I'm
is
not the first person to say that Ross Lyon's Operation Mincemeat is.
Well, the idea that the leaked audio was deliberate, that he was leaking tactics, but it's like, we are nowhere in the frame for threatening any of the top eight, even top 10 sides. Like, I don't think anyone's going to be like, yeah, well, you clearly don't. You put a second last season.
That's true.
Broden, we'll let you go. Before we do, brand new Auntie Donna series coming soon. Tell us all about it.
We made a show in America and then, the story goes, we made a pilot in Australia for the ABC. People liked it, and then someone said, nah, this is no – someone didn't like it. Someone said, this is no good, and they said, have a good one. And then we made a pilot for Stan, and then Stan were like – we worked really hard on it, and then they went, oh, we have no money for this. Why'd you make us make a pilot? And then we went, we'll just be YouTubers and we'll just tour around because no one's ever going to give us a TV show. And then we went to America and we pitched this TV show to America, and we did it very like – whatever. And they went, yeah, you seem to not give a fuck enough that we're going to give you a TV show. And so we made that, and was our first time making something, and we're really proud of it. We're like, but we have a lot of things that we want to do next to make a proper, like to make a really a show that we're really proud of. And we're ready to go. And Netflix said, oh, no, we're only giving you one. Why would we ever give you more than that? And then ABC said, fuck yeah, come. We're different people now. We're cool people who work at the ABC now. Come make a show with us. And so we wrote a sitcom that's a mix of like sketches, but then has a bit more of a storyline to it. So the references would be stuff like Marty Boosh. South Park is the biggest one for me though. Like
Great.
Just
like, I'm just making my way through the latest series of South Park. It is so good.
I love them so much. Love them so much.
Like, their strike rate is so incredibly high with everything too. It's not just like the South Park. It's with, like, you know, Book of Mormon.
Their big thing that they're doing now, because everything they touch is an artwork and a masterpiece from Broadway or whatever. The thing that they've consumed their life with most recently is deep fake technology.
Oh, yeah. I've seen the Trump videos, Sassy Trump.
So they're making a movie, and I think whatever it's going to be, I don't know if it'll be good or bad, it's going to be fucking like Saving Private Ryan levels impactful.
Yeah, right.
Can you imagine what they'll do with that?
Oh my God, they're going to get sued so bad. It's great. I can't wait to see it.
Our TV show is just it's a sitcom we made. And I was just saying before, it's the best thing I think we've made. So people might hate it, but I love it. It's my favorite thing we've made.
All right. What's it called, this thing that people may hate?
You know, it's called Auntie Donna's Coffee Cafe. It's got it's an ABC show, right? But it's us trying to make our show for the ABC. And so it's got like Richard Roxburgh in it playing Rake. It's got Miranda Tapsell in it. It's got Sean McAuliffe, Sam Pang. Who else is in it? Pia Miranda, looking for Ella Brandy's Pia Miranda. Who I used to have a big crush on, and then we made her do our show. We tried to fill it with as many like young comedians as possible because no one would put us on TV for a long time. So we're like, we should just go hammer and tong for that.
And when's it coming out?
I don't know. April 12th.
All right. We will put links to everything in the episode description below. But, Broden, thank you for coming on the show. Good luck with the podcast. I look forward to listening and perhaps appearing on it in the future.
Thank you for being such a wonderful friend and being so supportive of everyone and being a championing cool people, including myself.
Thanks, mate. I'm expecting some kind of kickback at some later point.
You're going to get it.
Maserati, please. See ya.
It's your classic sign off. See ya.